Hello, my name's Eddie. I'm an addict.
Hey! Oh, we can't wait for Eddie. We can't wait for the Eddie conversation, Eddie.
This is going to be lively, isn't it? Oh, dear. They say be careful what you wish for, and the last time I shared here a while ago, I began the share by saying I should be doing the 40 and not the 15, and I ended it by saying I should be doing the 40 and not the 15. Now I'm sitting here doing the 40 and I'm thinking, God, I wish I'd done the 15. And, you know, just to kind of, I don't know where I'm going to go with it. I made a few little notes, but a friend of mine who's sitting just towards the back said to me earlier, they said, be careful you don't shit yourself. And I said, it's all right, don't worry, I already have. I've got my tenor man on. I don't take life too serious or myself too serious, but I really do take this program serious because it's life and death, and that's the truth. Right, I didn't think I'd get emotional. I've got so much gratitude for this and all that it's given me. Just sorry about that. I grew up in West London in what I now know to be a family that was powerless and unmanageable about addiction. There was lots of contradictions. You never knew where you stood a lot of the time at home, and there was a lot of fear. You know, it's just my story, and this didn't make me an addict, but it's part of what happened. My dad was an addict, a violent, controlling, abusive addict, and he used to, you know, I won't go into too much detail, but he used to get me and my brother out of bed to watch him beat our mum up, because he said that's what how a woman should be treated, really. That was kind of what we had to contend with. But at the same time, we'd go to family in Ireland and pretend everything was all right, and go to church and pretend everything was all right. And, you know, what stayed behind closed doors stayed behind closed doors, and you didn't tell anyone. You know, you just didn't open up. You didn't let anyone know about feelings or anything like that. And that's where I came from, really. So we grew up on the South Acton estate, and it was in the 70s, so that'll give you an idea how old I am. We'll say the early 70s as well, so that'll give you an even more of an idea. So I'm not young. And it was the sort of environment where they used to film any of the ones old enough to remember, Zed cars and Softly Softly and that sort of thing, because it was the urban ghetto. So you didn't have to kind of create one. You just went and filmed on this estate, and it was there. And it was nothing unusual to have kind of people kind of jumping out of windows or being thrown out of windows on upper stories and whatever. And, you know, the police were regular visitors to everyone's house, not just mine. It was kind of just a normal thing. There was like a routine that we were in. My dad had come. He'd kick off. There'd be aggravation. We didn't have a phone. Not everyone had a phone then. We'd bang on the upstairs ceiling. We were on the fifth floor. So the people on the sixth floor would hear the three bangs. They'd call the police. The police had come. And it was a regular thing. It just didn't ever change. My dad's disease, I guess, progressed, and in the end we actually had to move. We were told that for our own safety and my mum's safety, we had to move. We were kind of moved out of the area and put somewhere else. And you know, it's only my story, but I was seeing educational psychologists and therapists when I was like 8-9 years old. I was self-harming when I was 10. And, you know, something that I have made a few notes, something that Natasha mentioned about fantasy. You know, there's a film called Tron, some of you may remember. And I was like that with the TV. I'd get so involved and engrossed in the TV programs, I'd almost, like, go into the TV and be part of it. And that was my escape. You know, I just didn't want to be where I was. We moved when I was 10, and it all changed. You know, I went to see my dad. I craved all the time this acceptance and love. I can acknowledge that now. I just wanted him to tell me he loved me. And he never did, really. That's the truth. And that's just where he was. He didn't ever tell me that he loved me. And all I wanted was him to say he loved me. And I'd go back, you know, talk about doing the same thing, expecting a different result. And this is like as a child. I'd go and visit him in pubs, sit in corners and just wait for hours just for him to give me some attention and to say he loved me. And I wasn't going to be like him. You know, that's the reality. Do you know what I mean? I am not going to be like that. You know, I'm not going to be that person. And to a certain extent, I did become that person, unfortunately, through this disease. So moved when I was 10, self-harming, went to a different school. You know, I kind of fast-tracked a lot of it. It was stricter. You had to wear a uniform. I didn't fit in. You know, I didn't like it at all. Those, for me, anyone says school was the best days of their life, that's rubbish. I hated every single minute of it. I just could not wait to get out. I am an ethnic minority group. I'm a ginger. So I was bullied relentlessly, you know, carrot top, ginger nut, curly, you know, all the rest of it. And I hated myself as much as they hated me. And started, I think, when, you know, I won't go into too much substance detail, but I've got an elder brother, 6 years older than me, and I had the benefit of him working in a paint factory. So I used to bring thinners home to sell to people. And I used to just lock myself in the shed with thinners. And that was what I did. I just kind of just would lock myself away and run away, you know, run away. Soon started drinking, you know, the usual sort of stuff. Started drinking when I was about 13. And my whole life, I guess I was, you know, it was unmanageable. It was out of control in a sense. You know, I tried to work really hard. When I did leave school, went to college, etc., got jobs, and I thought as long as I had the external stuff, I worked hard and I had a flat and a car and this and that and the other, I was okay. But I could never manage my finances or look after anything. You know, it was like credit cards, overdrafts, remortgages, leave the job before they realise that you're what you're like. You know what I mean? Kind of go to another job. It was like that the whole time. But I thought I was doing all right. But I was hiding it all for a great number of years. I was hiding it all. So, you know, I've got in and out of relationships, and those were all insane, really. That's the truth, you know. One of the main reasons they were insane is because I was in them. You know, they might have been all right if I weren't there. But, you know, I just caused chaos, really. I caused chaos wherever I went. I didn't intend to. I went in there with all good intent, you know. You know, and it's the typical, for me anyhow, addict thing. I'd meet the woman, you know, be madly in love, shack up with her, move in, you know, then it'd all be over. I was out the door again with my black bags and, you know, down the street, you know, back to my mum's or wherever. And it was just like, and I just thought, why do these people keep doing this to me? There was no sense of responsibility about me and what I did. It was just the whole time, why do these people keep doing this to me? So, you know, so I've tried to achieve. I worked. I got into middle management. You know, kind of. It was all external. It was all kind of for show. I've got a daughter who's now. What she should be 22, 23 in September. And you know, that was another. I mean, that's one of the blessings of my life. It really is, and I'm just so, so proud of her. Because she's got challenges, but she just kind of faces them. Like, she hasn't got to have a program. Do you know what I mean? She just deals with it. Do you know what I mean? That's, like, apparently there are some people that can do that. They can, I'm not one of them. There are some people who can deal with stuff, you know, and they set a challenge or a goal and they will go and do it. You know, I just run away, you know. And, you know, just keep running, really. So one of these relationships ended up with my daughter, who... I'm really, you know, so proud of. And, you know, it was with our mum, it was on and off for a little while. Like, again, it was, you know, straight in, straight out, you know, hanging around on the, you know, on the outskirts. Even though it was over, I hung around on the outskirts hoping for something, hoping for some crumbs. And nothing happened. And then in 2000... I've done loads of different things to be involved and to fit in. You know, I've done loads of things to be involved and fit in. I'd do anything to be involved and fit in. I've been a scout leader. I've done this. I've done that. Do you know what I mean? It's just so I could be a part of and finding some belonging, which I finally found here. You know, I went everywhere to find what's here. And So I was in this show doing a bit of acting, you know. I kind of like to be other people. The one thing I don't like being is me. You know, you ask me to be somebody else, I'm fine. So I was in this show with this... my daughter was in the show with me. There was this woman who I became friendly with her husband and their three kids. Needless to say, I ended up having an affair with her. And kind of ended up living with this woman again. You know, it was kind of... I think it can only happen to addicts, to me anyhow. It kind of happened by accident. I was having an affair with her. He found out, and I should have realised there was something wrong because he just sort of moved out and said, "Have her," basically. I should have realised there was something not quite right. So I ended up moving in and taking over the responsibility of this house in Ruislip that I couldn't anywhere near afford. And his three kids, and trying to be the Waltons or the Brady Bunch and have the perfect family, my daughter would come and stay every weekend. So I just put more and more and more on till it was eventually going to collapse. I mean, I can see that in hindsight, but at the time I thought, I'm doing fantastic. Look, I'm middle management, I've got a semi, you know, three kids, two cars on the drive, blah, 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 look how well I'm doing. But I was falling to pieces. I was drinking more and more, everything was getting chaotic, I was getting aggressive towards her. You know, I was getting aggro, and again, what the so-called normal regular people do is when it gets to that stage, apparently they call it a day. You know, they cut their losses and say, look, it's not working out, you know. But I decided that we'd move to Brighton because we could do that, you know, and it's a bit cheaper. We had a little bit more money. It was going a bit more to shit, so my next cunning plan, because I have those sometimes, was to get engaged. It was brilliant. So the natural thing after the engagement, when it's even going more shitty, is get married. So I kind of accidentally ended up married. And, you know, when I look back at it, it was such a total disaster. And I think anyone else could see it was a total disaster except for me. And I ended up married to this woman. We got married in the May, and... we were separated in the November, and I was in treatment that November, which was November 2003. And that was where I was first introduced to recovery, I guess. I was in the Priory in Hove, not because I'm a celebrity and I've got loads of money, but because I worked somewhere where they had Bupa. So God bless Bupa. I ended up in a treatment centre, and the last thing I wanted to admit was I had a problem with alcohol because of my dad and my brother and other things, you know, kind of. I was quite indignant. I was like, me, a problem with drink? Surely not. You've got the wrong person. Bearing in mind, I'd assaulted her, been arrested, tried to kill myself all within 3 days. And it was blatantly obvious to everyone else. I was like, no, surely you've got the wrong person. It's not me. But I complied and conformed for a little bit because I thought in my delusion that I could save the marriage. So I finished my 28 days treatment and started going to meetings of the mothership in the Brighton and Hove area. So I went there for a while, and I kind of, my soon to be after ex-wife was starting to show me a bit of trust, and I had a sponsor. I was going to meetings and things, and this is please do take note of me being an idiot, and you don't have to do the same. My next cunning plan, brilliant idea because I do have them, was that I'd share my step five with my, at the time, soon to be ex-wife. And the result was she got a restraining order. I don't understand, you know. It was my plan and it didn't go the way I wanted. I don't understand why that happened. So I got a nickname of at the time of Eddie Hot Potato because she dropped me like a hot potato as soon as she heard the step five. And I came back to London to live with a relative who'd not physically but emotionally abused me for years, my uncle. He needed caring for. I needed somewhere to live. Again, you know, sensible people don't do that sort of thing, but I became his carer and was going to meetings, but not really working a program. I was just kind of... I knew that I had to do something else except for what I was doing, but I didn't know what else to do. So I was there for a few years. I kind of managed to maintain work and to progress a bit within work. And then my uncle became very ill, and an addict without a program, one of the worst things can happen is to get money. And my uncle died and left me a considerable amount of money. And I didn't know what to do with it. But I soon found addicts that would help me to spend it. And managed to, you know, I won't go into too much, but managed in a 2.5 year period to lose everything I had, be disowned by my family, and to be 7.5 stone, wandering around the streets in that area like I'd been in some sort of war zone. I think it's the only way of describing it. I was like wandering around like with post-traumatic stress or something, you know, just kind of thinking, what happened? How did that happen? And any consequence couldn't stop me using. You know, my family said, if you don't stop using, we're going to disown you. What difference does that make? I've got nothing else if I don't use, so let's go and score and get some more. My daughter's mum said, bearing in mind how close I am to my daughter and how much I think of her, if I didn't sort myself out, I couldn't see her. The next natural thing for me to do as an addict without a program is go and score. You know what I mean? That's what I did. And, you know, I sold everything. You know, I sold all the furniture from the flat I lived in. I ended up living in one room. I'd sold the telly, I had the radio, and that didn't work very well. And I just, you know, kind of sort of become a gyro junkie for a little while. You know, I'd go to meetings when I didn't have money to try and figure out what was wrong. I'd occasionally ponce money off people because that's what I did, and go and score and get some money. I'd wait for my benefit to come, and as soon as it came, I couldn't spend it quick enough. And, you know, I was just bewildered. I was totally bewildered. And going to meetings and getting taken to meetings. And in 2009, I moved from, not far from where I was, but I moved to kind of another area. And I decided that I wasn't going to use anymore without a program. So I tried that for a little bit, but that didn't really work. I moved to this new place, and I moved on the Tuesday. I went to a meeting on the Wednesday, and it was lots of old people who had loads of recovery and I couldn't identify with. Or should I say, I wouldn't identify with rather than I couldn't identify with. And I got what little bit of money I could together and scored, and I sat in my new flat at the time. And I sat there and did my drugs. And it was like the Verve say, the drugs don't work. I was sitting crying because nothing had changed. And there's nothing worse than to sit there on your own, bewildered, and kind of just know, what do I do now? I mean, thankfully, we're lucky we have a program of recovery. We have 12-step fellowships. But I needed to engage in it, not just show up, engage. So I went to a meeting on the Thursday night, which was at the YMCA in Ealing at the time. And it was a brand new meeting. There was, I think, 3 people there, and I was still on a script. And I took the Kit T commitment. And I didn't know anyone could get that obsessed about making tea. I was getting donuts. I was getting different types of donuts. I was getting cakes. I was getting biscuits. I just wanted people to like me still. Do you know what I mean? I wanted people to like me and to acknowledge me, and, you know, that my higher power looked after me. So I went to the meeting on that Thursday night, and somebody who I'd scored drugs off previously was at the meeting, and we got a lift home, and he lived opposite me. And, you know, if that's not somebody intervening for me, I don't know what is. So I lived in number 6, he lived in number 9, and the other thing was we got our benefits the opposite weeks to each other, so one of us would always have money. So we early recovery was good in that sense, because we'd take turns in cooking for each other, we'd, you know, help each other top up each other's oysters, we'd go to meetings, and it was good, you know. And I got involved in some strong groups. You know, I had daily suggestions to follow, which, you know, not everyone adheres to, but I swear by them. I still do them now. You know what I mean? I still do them now. And, you know, I kind of got a sponsor, started working. And there's any program of recovery, I have to say, any program of recovery works. It wasn't the NA Green and Gold program of recovery. It was a different program of recovery. But at that time, it works for me. So I started doing that and, you know, started getting well, really. You know, I started, you know, feeling better. People started trusting me. You know, I kind of, I've got a dog and I'd walk my dog in the park and then I'd meet people and then they'd say, do you dog walk? And I thought, I don't mind, you know what I mean? Kind of. So I ended up walking people's dogs and then they gave me the keys to their houses. I mean, like, do they not know what I'm like? You know what I mean? They give me the key to their houses. And one particular person who's an actress and is on the TV and films and whatever, she was going away to New York filming and she said, there are the keys. Can you come in and water the plants and feed the dogs and look after them and walk them while I'm away? And I was like, what? Do you know what I mean? I didn't even trust myself. That people showed me trust and compassion and love and kindness. And, you know, that's where I grew up from in recovery. And, you know, after 2.5 years of that, and I only speak for myself, I was at a point where I wasn't sure if I was going to kill me or somebody else or both. And I came to the London Convention and heard the main speaker speak, who's now my sponsor, who does service here. We do service here together. And I thought, something's got to change. You know, and I'm responsible for my recovery, not somebody else. So I asked that person if they'd sponsor me, and they said, yeah, I'll sponsor you, no problem. I said, you know, are you willing to go? And the usual kind of stuff. And, you know, and we've worked over the last few years through the steps. And the Green and Gold was a revelation for me. That's all I say for me. It was a revelation, answering the questions and going in depth and looking at my motives, looking at the way I operate, looking at the way I did things, you know, writing it down, reading it to somebody, looking at it. It was just, it really opened me up, really. That's all I can say, is it opened me up. And I was encouraged to do service. I've been doing service here now since I was 6 months clean, and I'm over 7 years clean now, and I've been a regular, consistent, I think, and I hope, member of this group. And this group means a hell of a lot to me. And the support I get here, the support I get here means a lot to me. You know, and I'm not going to say by any means, you know, I'm the perfect recovering addict. You know, far from it. I mean, I don't use a day at a time. I do gratitude lists. I pray. I meditate. I do a regular inventory. But I've had challenges. You know, a lot of them are my own doing. I mean, my sponsor said to me before, he said, you should have your own fellowship and it should be Sabotage Anonymous, because you just want to sabotage yourself. Yeah, and it's true. You know, it's true. I kind of have this ability to just want to mess it up for me. I don't know where it comes from, what it is, but I've just got this ability. You know, I've made a few notes here. See, where are we? Oh, 4 years clean. I went to celebrate being 4 years clean. I shared at a meeting on a Monday. Went for something to eat after. I'd been to something to eat before. And a newcomer at the time come home with me and had to nurse me because I was sick virtually all night. I was taken away in an ambulance. And I have stomach issues. And it's because they realised through discussion and stuff after a period of time that, as well as everything else, as if I'm not fucked up enough, excuse my language, but I'm bulimic. But it was hidden by everything else for years. You know what I mean? I'd think nothing of just eating, throwing up, you know, feeling guilt and shame, having this, doing the same with drink, doing the same with anything. And, you know, that's just, you know, it's like more layers of the onion. I found out there's this food issue. But I use the NA program of recovery. You know, I'm an addict. It's a disease of addiction to deal with that. And I still deal with that a lot of the time. At 5 years clean, I got into trouble with inappropriate sexual behaviours. You know, I don't mind saying that here. You know, I was paying for sex with people that I couldn't afford to pay because I didn't have the money. It was, again, the addictive thing of, like, just doing that thing. And it's just, what goes on in my nut that I do that? What is it that goes on in my nut? But I, again, you know, we discussed it. We dealt with it here in NA. 6 years clean, that was a major challenge. A lot of people here know that. I was made redundant in the May I went through a debt relief order, so I kind of went bankrupt. And in the October, bearing in mind I was 6 years clean that October, in the October I was evicted. I was made homeless. So, I only speak for myself. People may not want to use or whatever, but I was made homeless and went to the town hall. They told me they couldn't help me, which was a little bit of a blow, even though I pretty much knew they couldn't. And I sat outside a pub for an hour thinking about drinking. You know what I mean? And I have to be honest about that. I have to own that. You know, it's no good smiling and jumping about saying it's fantastic, but I never thought about it. I thought about it. I didn't have to follow through on that thought before any thought was immediately followed with an action. You know, I had a program of recovery. I have people in fellowship. I have people that support me and help me and love them and care for me. You know, I rung somebody. I said, what are you doing sitting outside a pub? Just get your ass away from there. Which is pretty good advice, but I just couldn't see it. And 2 days after that, I was thinking of, like, getting drugs. Do you know what I mean? Because I was, like, living in a caravan with my dog in the pissing rain in the cold. And, it was like torture. You know what I mean? It was like the pitter-patter on the roof of the wind. I thought I was taking off. I thought I was going to end up in the wonderful land of Oz. Do you know what I mean? I thought, like, I'm going to see Dorothy in a minute. I don't know what's going on. But I didn't have to use through all that, you know. Wanting to and using is two different things, you know, and that's for me anyhow. You know, wanting to do it, you know, there's lots of things I want to do. I want to kill people sometimes, but I don't do it. You know, before, any thought was just immediately followed with an action. So, so this year things have turned around a bit. I've got a job. In fact, I've got a few jobs. I work part time for a couple of places, and I do some private work. I've got a home which I've been in for coming up a year, I suppose now, not far off it. And the big one for me is I bought a car. I mean, my last car, I have to own this as well, went to a drug dealer. You know what I mean? I was in the car, I owed him money. I got out of the car, I gave him the logbook. I said, I'll have the drugs, you have the car. You know, it seemed like a perfectly good deal at the time. I'm sure he thought it was as well. But, so I've not actually driven for, I think it's 9 years or something like that. And now I've got a car, and it's just like the excitement and the fear. But, you know, it's just like I've got freedom. I've got freedom that I've wanted all my life. And it's through coming here, through doing this. You know, sometimes good, sometimes not so good. But I do not pick up. Never again, hopefully. Never again. So, life's all right. With the money I have now, instead of spending it stupidly, trying not to spend it stupidly, I try and create memories now for myself and my daughter. You know, just she's into animals and animal care and stuff, and she's studying at college, so we're going to the National Pet Show, and we're going to see the super vet. Anyone watches the telly knows the super vet? We're going to see the super vet, and we're going to meet him. We're going to see Robbie Williams on the 23rd of June. She adores him. She has since she was little. And she's visually impaired, so I was privileged enough and able enough to buy better tickets so we can be near the front so she can actually see him. I mean, it's before it was all about me. It was what I wanted, how I wanted, when I wanted. Now I try and think of others. I try and help others. You know, so another thing is I'm getting... I've got my passport form. I'm getting my passport sorted, and I'm looking forward to going to, hopefully, a convention in Moscow later in the year. That's an aim and a goal. You know, it's kind of... Before, I went nowhere. I made a note here. I travelled when I was younger. I worked at Heathrow and travelled. I spent 4 days in Tokyo, in the Red Line, Tokyo. That's where I spent 4 days. There's a pub in Tokyo called the Red Line, and I spent 4 days in it. that's my travel, do you know what I mean? It's I went to Florida, and the highlight was being fished out of the swimming pool and revived by the paramedics because I almost died. You know, that's, You know, that was the memories I created. It was just nonsense. It was chaos. You know, and, service. You know, man, have I got much?
Got 5 minutes.
Oh, I've got 5 minutes. We got loads of time. That's going all right, actually. I'm getting into my stride now. Don't forget to edit. Remember, you're going to edit, make it so it's perfect, yeah? Perfect. So it's going to be like a 20-minute CD or share, but it's going to be just the best bits. So service, I can't advocate, I think that's the right word, service enough. I've learnt so much through doing service. It's helped me grow up. I acted, I pretended to be a grown-up. Now I'm a bit better at doing it because I've done service. I've done service at group level, continuously. Area for a while, and the challenging one, and it is growth, it really is growth, but it is a challenge, and there's a few people here who know it, is region. Regional service, or a bunch of addicts from all over the country trying to come to a decision. It's something to watch and to behold, it really is. You spend days debating the same subject over and over again. You discuss how much it costs to debate the subject. You say how it's bad that we're discussing it and costing NA that much money, but then we do it again at the next region. But that's the way it works, you know what I mean? It's that's recovery. Yes, so I've done the service at all those levels. You know, I get far more out of doing service than what I give, in my belief. You know, since I've been working, I've not been getting to as many meetings as perhaps I'd like to. But I've, when I've been asked to do service, I've done it. And I've travelled, you know, I've travelled. I went to Bromley a while ago, which is a fair trek for me. But, you know, I went out of my way, I did it. I tried to carry a message of recovery. You know, I don't want to talk all about the war stories. We all know how to use drugs and how to screw up. If we didn't, we wouldn't be here. You know, it's how to get over that and how to build a better life. Yeah, so I done service there, and a couple of weeks ago, was it a Wednesday night? It was the night before the strike, and it was over in southeast London. So I went over there to Greenwich Way. And it was a good meeting. It was nice. And since the only thing about doing service there. So when I do service there, then somebody says to me, would you come out to Charlton? Do you know what I mean? So it's nice doing service, but then you're asked to do somewhere else where it's a whole evening out. But, you know, if someone said to me, it's a whole evening out, you can go and get really good crack, would I sit at home? Would you sit at home? I think it's a question. I think I'll probably be on the first bus. You know, and the insanity am I using? I mean, we've done it. You know, I walked around with holes in my shoes in the pissing rain, waiting for 3 hours for somebody because they had the good gear. You know, literally waiting for 3 hours and saying, when they get here, I'm going to tell them how much of an arsehole they are. Because I am. I really am going to tell them they're a total arsehole. And then when they turn up, excuse my language, but other than kissing their arse, I couldn't be any nicer to them because they've got what I want. And that is addiction. They have got what I want. And it doesn't matter what I have to do to get it, I'm going to get it. I come here, I'm freely given a life beyond my wildest dreams. I'm freely given freedom, not just from active addiction, but freedom in life. You know, I'm free to go where any man goes. What do I pay for it? Fiver, tenner, couple of quid. Is that a good deal? I think it's the best deal in town. I'll leave it there. Thanks. Thank you.